You're listening to The Readout, one development leader, their big idea, and how it can shape the future of Australian development assistance. Hosted by Lab CEO, Bridie Rice.
Australia's partnerships in Southeast Asia are constantly changing. As the region is set to become the fourth largest market in the world by 2040, Australia's development approach in Southeast Asia cannot remain business as usual. But whilst many in Australia's foreign policy and development community are calling for Australia to reinvest, others are asking, does Canberra have the skills, the stamina, and the leadership it takes to not just step up, but keep up with changes in our northern neighbourhood? I'm joined today by Diastika Rawitiati from Cora Design, where she's the products, marketing, and social lead. Dias is, of course, a former senior leader of Australia's aid program in Jakarta and long-time global development buff. In June this year, Dias published a firecracker of a piece on the Intel that really captured the imagination of Australia's development community. So it's great to be chatting today. Hi, Dias.
Hi, Brady. How are you?
Super, super. Look, Dias, I want to talk about your piece on the Intel. You argue that Australia does have the stamina. We do have the skills, the leadership. It needs to be a great development partner in Southeast Asia. But you also warn that we must take care about how Australia positions itself in the development landscape. What were you noticing in Indonesia when you were saying this?
So I think I was noticing several positive things. We've got healthy economic growth. I think the ADB, in its most recent development outlook report, they said Indonesia's economy is expected to grow at around 5% in 2023, and it's projected to maintain that same growth trajectory in 2024. I've also noticed, both from my time at Pulse Lab Jakarta and throughout these recent years, how vibrant of an ecosystem Indonesia has in terms of digital transformation and also tech startups. So you have all of this palpable energy moving towards progress. But I've also noticed, and this is post-pandemic reflections, what the pandemic did was really highlight some of the structural challenges that Indonesia has in terms of providing service delivery, in terms of addressing inequalities, in terms of coverage of its 270 million large population. So I think that was going on in my mind when I was writing that if you want to be a partner in this space, it's not actually about the size of the investment, but how you use it to leverage other things that can induce positive systemic effects.
I mean, in your piece, you go on to make the point that Australia's development cooperation investments are often in middle-income countries where, you know, for example, in Indonesia, where development assistance can represent less than 1% of a country's gross national income. And you argue that Australia needs to carefully factor in that economic growth in its development approach. Why do you think this is key? What should it look like?
Well, because it is less than 1%, I think the question is, how do we influence? How do we influence strategically in this large, complex system? And what is the need here that we're trying to address? I would argue that the need here is for ODA assistance to be part of a mechanism to hedge the risk of exploration and experimentation, and then generate learning that can help partner governments such as Indonesia to solve the conflicts issue. I feel that the way to change a system is to be in it and to absorb what are the things that come out when we do certain things. If you think of Australia's aid program as a cohesive, hopefully interconnected portfolio of activities, these are basically learning labs, or they can have the potential to function as learning labs for the partner government, because ODA investment is a relatively more flexible more adaptive and more agile, what you can then do is say, in this space, how about we try this? What happens if we try this sort of initiative? Does it improve learning outcomes in classrooms? Are there lessons that we can synthesize and aggregate across all of our experiences, trying different things in classrooms, that can then be generated as a policy recommendation for the government, with the results of the A program serving as a basis of evidence for further expansion into a more comprehensive policy?
It's so interesting hearing you speak about this learning mechanism, this systemic approach, because when I was reading your article, I guess I was really struck that you see the role of Australia's development programs certainly and more about generating that catalytic or that positive systemic effect. And there's a section in your article where you really set down three marching orders for how Australia should do this in every country where we work in Southeast Asia. And first up, you are calling for that unifying intent, you know, real clarity from Australia about where the place of development assistance was coming from and where it's going to. But second, you talked about something you just mentioned now. You said that Australia really needs that ability to design and manage a coherent development portfolio, you know, not just a bunch of little projects. And finally, you said that Australia really needs to have the ability to learn and work at a policy level with our partners. I mean, it sounds to me like you're saying that Australia's Development Assistance Program could reimagine itself as a learning program. So talk me through just how important you see what you are describing as experience-based learning for the success of Australian development in Indonesia.
I think in Indonesia, Australia has a very long history of development cooperation. We are building on the successes of previous investments in governance, in health, in education. And these have generated many, many learnings that have made their way into policy. I think what I see is that a lot of these learnings are sectoral. But as I mentioned earlier, some of the complex challenges come from the intersectionality of development issues, in that it's almost quite difficult to untangle the threads of interconnections between these complex development issues. So what's important, I feel, is learning across the different portfolios of aid investments that Australia has and providing these as intersectional recommendations for the government. So if you take the Development Partnership Plan, for instance, it would be important to sort of reimagine this as a learning space between Australia and Indonesia, for instance, and figure out what are key learning questions, what are shared key learning questions, what kind of specific knowledge does the government of Indonesia need to form certain policies that can then create positive systemic effects, and where are the best places in that system to generate this kind of knowledge. So if the government of Australia and the government of Indonesia are developing this development partnership plan, I think they would need to look at what are some system dynamics that would make good generators of learning for better development outcomes. And the derivative of that is then a cohesive aid portfolio that does work on governance, on health, on education, but works also across these different sectors to then say, we've seen a success here and there. This is what we've learned. These are some of the things that we recommend to be considered in policy.
I mean, what you are proposing, Dias, is actually quite revolutionary in the way that Australia conceives of development and of the way that we would conceive of partnership, to reorientate a development program around the power of exchange and learning and mutual interest in sharing information systems, policies, capabilities. That seems like a really exciting and sophisticated way to think about how Australia connects with countries like Indonesia going forward. So I hope that those that are drafting the DPPs that are going on at the moment are taking heed of your advice. And well, Diaz, it is almost time to wrap up, almost before I feel as though we have gotten started. But before you go, I want you to tackle our standing lab hypothetical. All right, so I want you to imagine you board an elevator in Jakarta, and as you turn to your left, you see Australia's Minister for International Development. He's the guy you can ask tough questions of. He's the guy that can give strong directions on how Australia engages in Indonesia. But you discover that you only have 1 minute in the elevator with him. What is it that you would want him to know the most? Go.
Minister, Australia's new international development policy is an excellent starting point, as it already positions us well to engage with stakeholders like policymakers in Indonesia as thoughtful partners in a complex, dynamic context. The policy also highlights continuous learning as a requisite of long-term development effects. But I think this should start from the process of developing the development partnership plans. What I am recommending is that we not only have a partnership dialogue, but we sit down together and formulate a shared intent with partner governments and understand the dynamics as a shared learning space for Australia and Indonesia. If Australia wants to position itself as a learning partner, as a knowledge partner for the governments of Indonesia, then I think having a shared intent, having a shared understanding of the learning space that we're working to generate from, and then from there, developing a cohesive, interconnected portfolio of aid activities that generates continuous learning that feed into policy recommendations would probably be the way to go.
Diaz, it's intelligence like yours that needs to be shaping the future of Australian development, not just in Indonesia, but also elsewhere. Thank you so much for your time. This has been a wonderful conversation. I think the idea of Australia being a knowledge partner in Indonesia and elsewhere is a fantastic one. And I know that all of us can't wait to see your insights coming out in the Lab's Pulse Check, where we're actually speaking to a broad range of Indonesians on exactly this topic around how Australia should and can be a partner to Indonesia. Well, that's it for today. Join me next time on The Readout, where each episode we sit down with one author, one big idea, and talk about how their ideas can shape the future of Australia's development assistance. If you liked hearing from Diaz, then you can find a link to her article in our show notes. And if you want extra previews, insights, and development analysis, then sign up to our email at devintelligencelab.com. Special thanks to the Lab team behind the scenes, Ruby St. Ledger and Walter Kolnagi. I'm Bridie Rice. This is The Readout. Talk soon.
We at The Lab acknowledge the traditional owners of the lands on which this podcast is recorded, the Ngunnawal and Ngambri people, and we extend our respects to their elders past, present and emerging. We're inspired by the storytelling tradition of the world's oldest living culture, and we pay homage to it when we share our stories or intelligence on this podcast.